Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, episode 56, Three Rivers. So hope everyone had a really good 4th of July. We are now into the third year of this podcast. Really surprising how fast time flies. But when we last spoke, we were doing a refresher on the Canada campaign. It was just a brief overview of everything that we had discussed in the campaign episodes way back in episodes 35 to like 42. And when I ended those episodes, there was a lot of confusion about the whole retreat. And so I tried to do the refresher episode, and the refresher episode still felt like there was holes. So I want to kind of go over that. We're going to go over the very last, I guess we'll call it battle, in the Northern campaign, just to kind of tie up all the loose ends. How do the Americans get from Canada into New York, and what the heck is going on? So for the 6 months that the Continental Army is in Canada, they are under overall command by Philip Schuyler. But he has to return to Albany due to issues with his health. So he leaves field command in the hands of, and very capable hands, I might want to add, of Richard Montgomery. Except Richard Montgomery is killed on the attack in Quebec on New Year's Eve. So after Quebec, the next logical person, or the next senior person, was in Montreal. That was David Wooster. Wooster takes command because Arnold is down with an injury. He was shot in his leg. When Washington sends reinforcements in early spring of 1776, Jonathan Thomas was supposed to take command of the army, but he comes down with smallpox. Remember, smallpox was running rampant through the camp at this time. So he puts his subordinate, William Thompson, in command. So as we're approaching May 1776, Washington will send Brigadier General Jonathan Sullivan north. Now this is where the command structure gets really hairy, because Sullivan is a Brigadier General. Thomas is a Major General, but Thomas is ill, so he can't effectively lead the army. And his subordinate, William Thompson, well, his commission to Brigadier General is more recent than Sullivan's, so Sullivan holds seniority, so he's gonna assume command over him. Wooster is leaving altogether, so Wooster is completely out of the picture. And Benedict Arnold, in the same time that the reinforcements were being sent north, was also elevated to Brigadier General, so he has no hat in the ring at this point because he's a newly promoted Brigadier General. So Sullivan is going to take over or assume overall command because he holds the senior commission. And that's kind of how things went. So as Sullivan went out to examine the Continental positions, he learns that Thomas is dead. So there is no Major General in command of the army in the north. So Sullivan is going to assume that he's taking over. So the confusion of the command structure, probably made more confusing by the explanation that I just gave, this is where we're going to start our story. Well, that's the American side of things. During all of this, Sir Guy Carleton is still held up in Quebec City. He was well protected in the city. Even though the siege was broken, he stayed put. He could poke at the Continentals, and sometimes he did, but there was no direct attack on the Continentals because he just didn't have the numbers. And he was going to wait for the spring thaw because he had promise of ships and men coming from England. So in the city, he sat and waited. The reinforcements that were promised by Lord George Germain arrived in early April. Now, as the first ships began to arrive, they were hampered with delays due to the fact that the waters around Newfoundland were still littered with icebergs. Even when the second wave arrived in early May, the icebergs were still clogging the waterways. It would take several weeks for ships to get from the bays on the open ocean to the river and down towards Quebec. So it wasn't until the second week of May that ships were able to make it into the St. Lawrence. And after 6 months, Carleton finally had the men to protect Quebec City and finally move against the rebels. By June 1st, even more transports arrived, bringing more troops and Generals John Burgoyne and Simon Fraser, which was also a welcomed sight because now we had two really powerful field commanders at his disposal. It wouldn't take long for the British to get into action. remember, these men were on a ship for was probably close to 2 months, if not almost three. They were very excited to be on dry land, or at least sturdy land, instead of rocking in the boats the whole time. So they were very happy to get into action right away. And so the British would send a force to head south and begin to liberate Canada from the rebels. Well, like we've seen in the past, not everything stays secret in Canada, and the Americans will figure out that the British are beginning to head south. And so Thompson will send Arthur Sinclair and his regiment to Three Rivers in an attempt to halt them. Sullivan learns of Thompson's move and orders him to take the rest of his 2,000 men and head to Three Rivers to reinforce Sinclair. But even a force this size was going to be no match for the 12,000 men that were bearing down on the small town. The Continental commanders didn't know it yet, but they were attacking the vanguard of the army that was meant to remove them from Canada. So on the night of June 6th, Thompson set out with the rest of his men and moved towards Sinclair's position near Three Rivers. They rendezvous at Nicolet around midnight. They camped there for the night, and the plan was the following night to cross the St. Lawrence River, and they were going to be 9 miles above the town of Three Rivers. From there, they would march through the night and surprise the British in the early morning. Thompson left about 250 men to guard the boats, as he led the rest towards the town. He split his men into five divisions. The plan was they were going to attack the British from four sides, leaving the 5th Division in reserve. This is where things become unplugged. It's not known whether it's incompetence or deception, but the Continentals were using local guides who misinformed the Americans on the number of troops in the town and how they were arrayed. The Canadian scouts also took them on a very roundabout way to Three Rivers, so that they were still marching well after daybreak. Whatever the reason, when the sun rose, the Continentals were attacked by the sloop of war Martin and armed transports in the river. Bombarded with broadsides, the Continentals pushed farther inland to avoid the cannonade. By the time they were in position, they were shocked to discover that they were facing not 800 men like they thought they were, but several thousand British and Hessians dug in, supported by artillery. In a deadly crossfire of field pieces and the guns from the ships, Thompson had no choice but to retreat. Fraser, making use of his transports, loaded some men and sent them downriver to cut off the Americans' retreat. The British moved to cover all possible crossings to trap the Americans on the other side of the St. Lawrence and keep them penned up so that they can capture them. This is where the retreat becomes a wild mess. Thompson himself is captured along with his subordinate and 200 other men. The rest of his men made it to the landing zone, but the British beat them there. They had the use of the transport, so they got there very quickly. But the boats were gone. The men guarding them rowed them away to save the boats because they saw the British were coming. So the rest of Thompson's men were forced to make a defensive position in the woods, finding a good spot where they could hold up and lay a strong defense for the inevitable British attack. Now, lucky for the Americans, Carleton did not press its advantage, and the next day, with the British army all strewn about all over the area around Three Rivers, ordered all British forces back to their original position. This gave the Americans the chance that they needed to return to Sorel unmolested. Now, in Montreal, Benedict Arnold was doing his best to get men and supplies down to St. John. On June 14th, the British fleet, about 12 to 18 ships, arrived off Sorel. Knowing that he was beat and there was no way that he was going to be able to withstand this British attack, Sullivan and the men at the Sorel fort will decamp and head up the Richelieu. The next morning, the 9th and 31st Regiments of Foot would disembark and march for Sorel. With Sullivan's men already gone, They held the position and wait for their orders. Sullivan had marched his men to Chambly, but the fort was still exposed. Remember, we talked about Chambly when we were talking about the original invasion of Quebec, and some Canadian militia with a few Continentals and a cannon were able to capture the fort because the walls were so thin. Now imagine a full British artillery company with thousands of troops to back it up, the fort would fall in a matter of minutes. So Chambly is too well exposed. So as with Sorrel, he decided that he was going to keep his men moving. But then rumor got through the column that the British were right on their tails, and the panic troops didn't stop running until they hit Crown Point in the New York colony. In all of this confusion, in all of this retreating and getting away from the British, no one bothered to tell Arnold what the heck was going on. So unaware that he was what was going on, he decided to send his aide, James Wilkinson, to find out. Wilkinson and his band ran into the British column that was moving from Sorrel towards Montreal. Well, Wilkinson immediately set off racing back to Montreal and arrived by 5 p.m., informed Arnold of what was going on, and by 7 p.m., the evacuation of Montreal was underway. By June 17th, Arnold and his men had met up with the remaining American forces in Canada at St. John. Now, in the fort, they decided to hold a council of war. They had to figure out what they were going to do. And it was decided, like Chambly, like Sorrel, the position of St. John was just not something that can be held. So it's decided that they're going to abandon the fort, and Arnold began sending men and supplies from Île-aux-Noix and St. John to Crown Point. Then he ordered the frames of ships that they were building at St. John. He had them numbered and taken apart, put on bateaux, and sent south to Crown Point as well. Arnold's last action was to ride to Chambly to see the state of the British advance. Well, seeing that the British were advancing more quickly, he and his aide, James Wilkinson, rode back to St. John. There, they ordered the men to set torch to the fort. This way, they didn't leave anything behind for the British to use. And Arnold, in true fashion of his character, really not wanting anything left behind that the British can use, took out his pistol and shot his horse. He then ordered Wilkinson to do the same. Hesitant to do so, but being the good soldier, Wilkinson did the same. They took their saddles, loaded them on the bateau, and Arnold was the man to push off the boat from the shores of Canada. He would be the last soldier to step foot in Canada during the American Revolution. At Île-aux-Noix, Sullivan tried to hold the position, but it's a low, swampy area. Now, if you remember, Île-aux-Noix is right on the border of the New York colony and Canada. It's right there on the border. It's that low, swampy area that Montgomery kind of disembarked his men when they made their move north originally. And this place is a disease factory. Disease would spread quickly through the camp. The declining health of the army was already in question because they had smallpox running rampant. There was just no way that they were going to be able to hold Île-aux-Noix, especially with a battered and disease-ridden army. So Schuyler ordered the army to head to Crown Point. With that, the Americans are gone from Canada, and British had to prepare for the invasion of the American colonies. The Americans, now in Crown Point, had to prepare for the inevitable attack. But the next time these two armies would face each other, it would be on the water. So that's where I'm going to leave it this week. This was a little bit next few episodes are going to be a little bit shorter because we're really setting the stage for our Valcour Island campaign. And this campaign is going to be very interesting because its key feature, is something that is known to a lot of people as Benedict Arnold's Navy. And I use that term because I'm actually quoting the title of a book. And a lot of historians have used the title of this book to kind of give the example of what a revolutionary lake navy was like. You got to remember, not only were we fighting on the colony land, like on the hard ground, we were fighting at sea. And fighting at sea also meant we were fighting on the waterways in the colonies themselves, like the St. Lawrence, like the Hudson River, so things like that. And we start seeing these river navies pop up, or these lake navies pop up. And James L. Nelson writes this book, Benedict Arnold's Navy, The Ragtag Fleet That Lost the Battle of Lake Champlain but Won the American Revolution. That's a bit of a spoiler alert there. This will be a losing battle for the Americans. But it's shows that, one, it shows the range of Benedict Arnold's command ability. Not only can he command troops on the ground, but he can command a navy. Also, we see what the Americans have to go through to defend their position and keep Burgoyne and Carleton locked up in the northern part of New York for an entire summer, just by using this ragtag fleet. And that's going to be the focal point for the next block of episodes. We're going to be talking about building this navy, what goes into it. It's going to be a lot more concise information that I usually give broader information when I'm talking about campaigns, because there's just so much that goes on and goes into them. I don't cover a lot of the supplies and a lot of the intricate parts. For this one, I'm going to, because we're going to see how Arnold uses what he has available to him and builds this navy from pretty much scraps and bits and pieces that he finds that he stole from the British. So that's where we're going to start our next story arc and the Battle of Alcor Island. Until next time, I hope everyone has a good week, and as always, keep the powder dry.